have no mercy in this land. Whoa, death don't have no mercy in this land. He'll come to your house and he won't stay long. Look in the bed, you see your poor mom gone. Death don't have no mercy in this land.
Whoa, music was always a constant there in my life. I went to see the Rolling Stones when I was 2 months old. I went to see Lou Reed when I was four. So I'm sure those things had some effect on me. I remember once hearing a Lou Reed song and thinking, I don't ever remember hearing this song before, and I didn't know the title of it, but it felt so familiar to hear it, and thought maybe it was something from that time.
This magic moment, so different and so new, was like any other. Until I met you, and then it happened.
And then you do that kind of stepping stone musical instrument trip through school. We play recorder and you have a crack at the violin and try the cello and have some piano lessons maybe and sing in a choir, and then eventually you get to the stage of your life where you start to go, oh, I think I want to play the guitar. I don't want to play the violin or the oboe or whatever. You really find your own musical personality.
Whenever I hold you tight, this magic moment, while your lips are close to mine, will last forever.
I think I started playing in punk bands when I was at school, and then I joined the teacher's band. My dad played in that band and he couldn't be there for one gig, so I ended up stepping in for him and playing harmonica. But I played a lot of guitar and some weird kind of teenage punk bands. I think I've definitely retained a punk ethos. I think that's a big part of my attitude towards playing, and the energy I think is good to bring across. I always look for that in somehow in songs. Like, I think blues has a really great energy. You listen to some of the John Lee Hooker recordings or something, and just the way he says yeah, it's like affirmative, it's positive, it's pushing, it's a driving kind of a force. I really like that side of the blues music, and then I love that thing of punk music where it's not asking, it's not saying please help me or something, it's saying everything's destroyed, you know, like I love that sentiment, and I think to play with that attitude can be really great.
Yes, I pack my own suitcase. Yes, I hit that dusty trail.
I went to Melbourne when I was, it was to finish off school, and then I stayed there till I was like 26 or something, and that was part of it was the live music scene and how many venues there were to play in, how many bands there were. I joined some guys in Melbourne who were looking for a bass player, but we got to the gig and they said, do you know how to set up a drum kit? And I was like, yeah, I can do that. I've kind of cobbled it together, and then they said, oh, you can play it for the gig. And it was like, what the hell, man? Wasn't ready for that, but somehow staggered through. Just felt like there was lots of that sort of stuff happening. And then I moved back to Auckland. It felt like there was just nothing happening at all, you know, and I was stuck there, missing having a band to play with.
I can settle down and be doing just fine till I hear an old freight rolling down the line.
So I had to get in and learn a whole lot of Hank Williams songs to start off, just to get the hang of singing. Hank Williams was someone who, I don't know when exactly he came into my life, but it felt like reducing it back to that purity of what we're talking about with punk music. He had that really stripped back, you know, it's these chords, you don't add in another chord, you don't deviate from the formula of simple songs, and you say what you want to say in those songs, you know, similar to Dylan with his three chords and the truth kind of thing. He wasn't alive for that long, And he did a really amazing representation of the things he wanted to say by creating strange characters. It sounded like things people said, his lyrics. It didn't sound like he was constructing songs. It just sort of rolled out of his mouth somehow. And I mean, it was really terrifying because, I mean, anyone starting to sing can sympathise with that. It's not an easy thing to do. You got to just get over yourself, and you got to open up, and you got to get used to totally sucking at it before you can try and figure out what it is you want to do with it or where it can go. A lot of it was just getting up and singing for the sake of trying to make it work. I found it really hard to open my eyes and look at people. Just was so intensely concentrating on how to sing right that I couldn't think about anything else. And I entered a country music competition out in Papakura. I think I've still got those notes somewhere from the markings from the judge, and they were like, oh, you should open your eyes more. To see the times. You're listening to Musical Chairs on Radio New Zealand with Delaney Davidson.
Stone shine only for me, mine sit in my pocket, brittle and warm.
I guess the difference between those days of singing Hank Williams songs with my eyes closed and now is that maybe I've kind of realised that there's this whole personal thing going on inside you with everybody, whether you're on stage or not, and no one knows what that is. So you just go through your life and do what you do. Who's to know how you feel? But if you carry on this thing with a certain amount of facade that it's what you're meaning to do, then somehow you can usually get away with it. And then I moved to Switzerland, and I just remember really spending long amounts of time focusing and sitting down, even without an instrument, just trying to write a song without any instrument in your hands, where you're just going off chords, you know, and how they relate to each other, and finding lyrics and melodic ideas, and using a little tape recorder to record what I was doing and then play myself back and hear what the actual stuff was doing. I was really hungover one day, and I remember hearing this certain sound in my voice, and I was like, I really liked it. Like, it was just the spirit was there, and this sort of woebegone, destroyed person sentiment. And I just remember thinking, like rewinding it, listening to it over and over again, trying to figure out what it was. I think it was just like the emotion that was in the voice. I mean, I'm not a super operatic singer or super emotional either, but I think hearing the sentiment and the singing is a huge part of what I think is singing's about. In Switzerland, I was still working as a cook in kitchens, and then I got asked to join a band, so I just went with that and quit the kitchen work. And somehow from that, I could manage to make enough money to survive. I don't know how I did that. It's pretty confusing when I think about it. I just started to do solo stuff too. And then I left that band and just continued working with the solo work. I think in Europe, the idea of the artist as an entity or as a person who is just as valid as everybody else is just normal. So if you say you're a musician, people are like, oh wow, great, you know, somehow you're not a waster or a layabout or a dreamer or someone who hasn't grown up yet or someone who's chasing the dream. They just see it as a totally viable thing, you know. A lot of the stuff I learnt in Europe was through being involved with a record label called Voodoo Rhythm and just seeing this whole, like, you know, it was, I guess, that punk thing came back into play and the whole ethos of trashy sounds, doing it yourself, pushing things all over the place. That it felt like a really creative time for that label and a really interesting collection of bands that were there working with it. And this family somehow seemed to connect out to a lot of other people in Europe.
You feel so sad, you just want to drop. But everybody waits till the princess stop. Sweet little girl, she floats like cream. Pale little body in the cold dark stream.
You're working with a guy, Reverend Beatman, he was really a huge part of presenting things theatrically, and he'd done a lot of work that sort of freed his stage show up with theatre people in Bern and Switzerland. And just getting into a more developed stage presence than, hey man, this is me in my jeans and sneakers playing you songs I wrote in my bedroom, you know. It was much more, oh yeah, this band is a band of undertakers and this guy's a reverend and we are performing to you a preacher show or something like that. So starting to really find another way to present music that felt people could engage with it on a whole other level. Yeah, I think that was really a nice time to be a part of that scene and see where you could take people in an evening. Somehow me and Tape Man met. He had Stink Magnetic record label here in New Zealand, and I think I was coming back on a tour and we ended up meeting each other. He was like, dude, you got to have an album. And I was like, really? I gave him all these four-track demos I'd been making, just trying to learn about songwriting, and he put a track list of that together and released that. I remember having this album, and I would catch the train to Frankfurt. At the train station, I would get covers printed of the album, and I would go to the sound check, and I'd be burning CDs to my computer while the sound check was happening. And then I'd sort of cut them up and stick them together, and that was merchandise. It was really funny. And then, you know, making different albums for different gigs because you just had these sort of four-track demos to cobble together. So then Tape Man said, no, you have to have an album. So he put out Diamond, which was just the first album. And then after that, you go, oh, right, that's how you do an album. So I ended up writing a whole lot of songs and going to a studio in France with a guy called Bob Drake, who was an awesome engineer and quite exploratory in how he liked to record stuff. Made a second album, Ghost Songs, and then went from there to the two Voodoo Rhythm releases, Self Decapitation and Bad Luck Man. And then by that stage it was like, oh, this is how you do these albums. So I just sort of kept making those. And I kept sort of churning out those solo albums, and then coming back and forward from New Zealand, someone recommended I should meet this young guy who worked at the dairy, and that was Marlon Williams. And I didn't think about it really, but they kept telling me I should, and then we got booked to play a show separately at the same time, which was how we met. We'd sort of both turning up to this gig with guitars, and it's like, who are you and what are you doing here? And figured out we knew heaps of songs. So we thought we'd do the show together. But then when we were doing Sad But True Volume 1, was I think I started to go, oh, it's actually working with someone else. You know, you could pull out this idea of production.
Everything likes to float wild before it tumbles down. Throw, throw, throw your money down on the bar before this wheel stops spinning.
obviously with Marlon, everybody sees all the potential of their own unrealised dreams too, so they've got a million ideas for him. But I think doing those shows and meeting Tammy, she was the first person who said, would you like to produce my album instead of me producing my own albums? And she'd asked us to do this show in Waiheke with her, so we said, yeah, we'll do that. And she wanted to do some covers and, you know, so to find some songs to play together, and she'd suggested Jackson and some of these country songs, and I was like, why don't you do some soul songs, or why don't you do You'll Never Walk Alone, you know, something where you can really deal to it with your voice. From doing that, it was like seeing this whole other side of her that maybe hadn't been there before. This idea for something more grittier came about, you know, which was obviously much more the sort of stream I come from anyway. So doing that album Dynamite was seeing her in a whole different way that felt like much more her anyway. But I remember being just so grateful to her afterwards for asking me to do that, and it was a really great, great experience. When I'm talking about production, what I'm looking for is some part of that person that I think is seen as if they were a stone, and there's a figure somehow in the stone, and if you shine the light a certain way, it'll reveal this thing inside them. And sometimes I've had this experience where I've felt like I've been able to see somebody a certain way. You go with that vision that you see that and you believe in that, and you're going to reveal that to people, and it's the thing that before you do it, people will say, forget it, man, this stone isn't something I'm interested in. You say, ah, but look at this, and then you show that thing that the light from a certain angle can reveal, and that suddenly is what people will see. So that's the best thing about production. And most of the time you feel like you're so, it really sounds trite, but you feel like you're really lucky to be there, to be a part of that process and see that, in the way that you almost feel like saying to the person, oh, are you sure you even want me here? Like, you kind of, it's a funny thing. The more you do it, the more you feel like you shouldn't be there somehow. No one's ever done that for me. I think Beatman did that a bit with those albums. He just had ideas for how he heard the songs. But I would love that to happen. That would be something I would really look forward to, is someone saying, I can see this certain side in what you do. And hi, I'm Delaney Davidson. You're listening to Musical Chairs, London. And I've just been talking to someone the day before saying, yeah, man, if I'd stopped it tomorrow, who would care? And then I got a phone call the next day. I was staying in the floor in a jerky factory, and this phone rang, and someone was on the other end saying, you've been selected to win an Arts Laureateship if you want. It wasn't like you're a finalist. It was like you are, if you accept this, can become an Arts Laureate of New Zealand. And it was really amazing. I just spent some week trying to come to terms with it and thinking about it and what it meant. And it came with a cash prize, which meant I could put a deposit on a house, which is what I did with it. It was like drawing a line and going, everything you've done up till now has built you to this point, and everything you go on to do from here has this kind of backing. It was really an amazing experience that it had come from New Zealand too, because, I mean, if you live away a long time and you're touring all the time, it's hard to maintain a feeling of connection to home and the feeling of you mean anything to this country you come from, or what is your relevance, or do you even belong here? A lot of questions like that. So it felt like such a nice tip of the hat. Country music in New Zealand's slowly starting to grow up and get itself out of the that's country times, with people like Marlon pushing it, people like Tammy pushing it. That's matured into a sort of style of music that people like, and something that can have a relevance again, instead of being a throwback pastiche thing that they can often be. It's a much more varied idea of what country music is than you might even find in the States, where it's huge, you know. So, I mean, for me, having won a couple of country music awards, if I go to the States, there's no way in hell people think my music's country. They think it sounds like Radiohead from outer space, you know. It's not country, even though it's the language of American music and they understand all the references in it, and that it's Lead Belly covers and it's Hank Williams covers and it's Howling Wolf or whatever. They totally can see all that, but it's definitely not country. I think having done quite a lot of albums now with different people and always bringing this sort of feel to them, I've always sort of questioned, why have I never made one of those albums for myself? And I think coming up to the 10th solo release from me will be a chance to do that, to try and go, why don't you, you know, make a really nice, luscious sounding album for yourself? Because most of my albums have been pretty grunty and not polished, maybe.
I think I'm moving on. Maybe one time further after all. 1 mile is enough to keep momentum strong. Across over the line while listening to that highway call. If I make it out at all, if I make it out. So we